Ring-a-dang, le cool, des soumons.
Well, ring-a-dang, dang, dang.
Park your car along the river, set your way to walk. Until you love the baby, kiss a certain smile. Then you turn to the music and you hold it tight. And you watch the submarine make love to the night. And you're never too much, oh, then you're never too young. To watch the submarine races on the run. Just keep your dial on the constant show. And you make a lot of love and then you go, go, go. Grand coup, grand coup. Benson wins grand coup, grand coup. Benson wins and then you huck a little, kiss a little, make a lot of love. Swear to choose a chew by all the stars above. Just keep your dial on the grand coup show. Then you make a lot of love and then you go, go, go. Grand coup, grand coup. Benson wins grand coup. You got no money, show your submarine card and you get a $100. Don't be a thief, just say please. Then you show your card and you squeeze for these. Grand coup, grand coup. Benson wins. Grand coup, grand coup. Benson wins.
I'm the Grand Commodore.
Yeah.
Grand coup, grand coup. Benson wins. Grand coup, grand coup. Benson wins. Grand coup.
This is Riazani Iazalan, and I have a very spiazeshal shiazo with one of my all-time favorite groups. I cannot tell you how long I have waited to do an interview with the Diazelicates. How did I do, Denise?
Hi, Ronnie. You did perfect. Rizzo, is it?
We have Denise on the phone, and Denise, your nickname is D.
D?
That's D.
Actually, we used to call her Dinny.
Okay,
yeah.
Big secret. We have Denise Ferry, and we have Arlene Lanzotti Ganella, who is also known as Lee. How you doing, Arlene?
I'm fine, Ron.
And last and certainly not least, we have Peg, or Peggy.
The troublemaker.
The troublemaker, Peg Santilia.
Santilia was my family name.
Your
I made
family name.
Davison is mine.
Now it's Davison. So you're Peg or Peggy?
Either one. Peggy's fine.
But not late for dinner.
Right.
The three members of the Delicates. We just heard a little bit of the submarine race watcher theme, and I understand, Denise, that that is actually heard in a new movie called Airplay. Could you tell me about that?
Yes, it's a documentary that was released in 2008 by a fantastic producer, Carolyn Travis, and it was part of a documentary about disc jockeys and radio and what went on in radio. And our submarine race watchers theme was part of Murray the K segment of the documentary. It's fantastic. We're very proud of that. That
wow.
50 years later, it made a whole new entrance.
Amazing.
It's great,
because it was about so many DJs.
Yeah,
Murray the K was really right up there.
Legendary.
And that we were just talking about this last night, how at that time, the disc jockeys weren't just pushing buttons on their computer.
Right.
They really had personalities of their own. And, you know, when you did promotion for different records and everything, you actually became friends. Did shows together, you went out together. I mean, we were kids, but I mean, you know, they knew our families, or
right.
We were always chaperoned by one of our parents.
This film, by the way, is going to be on TV. Is that what the deal is with this film?
Yeah, there's two, A&E Entertainment and an HBO special.
We don't have the dates yet, but
no.
It was at the, I guess, the equivalent of the Cannes for documentaries.
It was Peg and Denise who actually met in 1952. Is that correct?
In second grade.
And what was the school?
School number 8 on Union Avenue in the infamous Belleville, New Jersey.
Which is the home of a lot of big-name music stars.
Right.
And a few of them include
Johnny Francis, Frank
right.
Valli, Tommy DeVito from the Four Seasons.
So it's really on the map, definitely.
It is, especially since Jersey Boys.
Yeah, absolutely. Lee, you came to the school in 1954, which was 2 years after Peg and Denise met, and you became quick friends, I understand.
Well, I came to number 8 school in 1954, fourth grade, and I happened to be in Denise's homeroom. It was unalphabetically, A to L, and the other homeroom was M to Z. So that put Peggy in the other homeroom. And when I walked into the classroom, this lovely girl came up to me, full head of black, beautiful curls, and just said to me, "I want to be your friend." And that's how it started at that point with Denise. And then later in the day, changing classes, in the hallway was Peggy with her homeroom, and Denise stopped her and introduced her to me right there in the hallway. And that's how I met Peggy. And it's been a friendship and a love affair of sorts ever since.
In 1955, you had a teacher named Mrs. Arthur?
Yes. Eleanor W. Arthur.
Eleanor W. Arthur. What did she do that was really special as far as helping you out? A talent show?
Yes. Denise, Peggy, and I belonged to the class chorus, and apparently Mrs. Arthur heard us and for some reason thought we'd work well together. We all sang different parts. We sang harmony, and she more or less handpicked us and put our voices together, if you will, and told us that there was going to be a talent show at the school and thought we would be great for it. And we started practicing, and we just didn't realize how well we sang together until she put us together like that. It was an amazing, amazing story and very astute on her part, I think.
Do you remember what song you sang?
Yes, I do. We sang a little song that we wrote called We Are the Belleville Girls.
We are the Belleville Girls.
I love it.
We got our hair and curls. We wear our dungarees rolled up above our knees. We wear our father's shirts. We wear our brother's ties. And when we kiss the boys, we catch them by surprise.
Oh, very good.
We're a little higher then.
Love it. After that, you just didn't look back. You realized it was what you wanted to do. You wanted to sing.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
Every minute.
I wanted to write.
Every minute that we were together, we were in one of our kitchens or dining rooms or Denise's mom and dad's delicatessen, eating and singing. We called it making up songs. We weren't really thinking of ourselves as writers then. We didn't even think about money. We were just loving to sing together. Our voices blended so easily, and we wrote about our two favorite subjects, boys and cars.
From 1955 to 1958, you wrote a lot of songs, you did a lot of singing, but it was mostly just for fun. And then 1958, you started to get serious. How did you become the Delicates?
Well, we were looking for a name, and the true story is we were in my dad's store. My parents owned a delicatessen in Belleville,
right near the school.
Right near
everybody
school.
Went to, on the way to school, on the way
absolutely.
Back.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was a school store. It was a very popular store back then, and we sold candy, ice cream, and sandwiches and everything in there. And we were trying to come up with a name, and my uncle was there. Remember, my Uncle Artie was there, and we were standing around, and he said, call yourself the Delicatessens. And it was like, ah, and then it was just like, the Delicates, and that was it.
Was he serious? He really wanted you to...
Yeah, well, he was just joking around.
Denise, was it your dad that wrote a letter to try to get an audition on the Ted Mack show?
Yes, he wrote a letter to Ted Mack Amateur Hour, which was a big TV show back then.
Right.
The Ted Mack Amateur Hour was a big deal because it was the American Idol type of show of that time. It was a thrill to be on it or try for it.
You would go to New York and in an auditorium, and you would go under a tent and audition for a panel of judges. We were asked to come into New York and do the audition. So what happened was we were chosen to be on the show, and that we were asked to leave the tent. And my dad came out later, and he said, we're leaving, let's go. And he was very angry. And the three of us were like, what happened? What happened? He said, we're not going to do anything because what they wanted was 50% to sign a contract for 50% of whatever we've earned within the next 5-year period.
Oh, wow.
You never know what was going to happen. On the way out, this gentleman approached us. And I'll never forget, his name was Lou Diara, and he approached us, and he looked at the three of us, and he said, you really have a great sound. Did you ever hear of the Brill Building? And we all went, no. He said, well, I know a manager there named Ted Eddy. He managed Louis Prima, and he also managed Tony Bennett, and he would love you girls. Then the week or two, we went to see him at the Brill Building, fell in love with us, and we signed a contract with him, and that was it.
Right.
That was the end of 1958. He was our first manager. He really cared about us. He was like an uncle. He was a very sweet guy. We got a lot of really good breaks through him because he introduced us to a lot of the big people in the business.
We should tell people who are not familiar with the Brill Building what it was all about. It was 1619 Broadway. There were a lot of singers and songwriters hoping to get breaks, and you could just do almost anything there. Is that correctly?
Yes, it is. If you had a good manager, which we did, it made it a lot easier, but you had a lot of young people singing in the halls, trying to catch a break, singing outside the buildings. Every time a man would walk out of the Brill Building, some of us would start singing, hoping it was a manager or a producer or somebody. It was a great opportunity, great time.
Now we're going to get to the fun part of the show, and we're going to have a lot of fun because we have so many great recordings we're going to play by your group. And the first recording that you made, I believe, may have been made in the Brill Building itself. I'm talking about My First Date and Johnny Bunny. And it's an appropriately named label for a group called The Delicates. The label was Tender.
It was located in the Brill Building upstairs, like I don't know how many floors up. But it was very simple to say, yeah, you're in, we like you, go upstairs and record. And we had written a song, we had to come up with the B-side of our first song, which was My First Date. And we decided, like Peggy said, you know, boys! So we thought of two boys from our school, this kid Booner and this boy Johnny, and we wrote Rockin' Bunny, and that was our B-side.
Before we hear the B-side, let's hear the A-side, which is My First Date. Well, that was the so-called A-side, but then you had a song that started out as Rockin' Bunny, and it became, how come it became Johnny Bunny?
Because Denise had a crush on somebody named Johnny.
Oh.
Actually, here's the funny part. You want to hear something funny?
Yeah.
I married Johnny Bunny.
You married Johnny Bunny?
I married Johnny Bunny.
Oh, gosh.
And he's the father of Lori Bunny, my daughter.
Lori Bunny.
So there you go.
Well, I have a question. Actually, when you listen to this song, you're going to hear Johnny Bunny and Booner Bunny. Did Booner feel bad because he was left out of the title?
He was later.
Booner, he was the captain of the football team. That's who he was.
At any rate, this is a very rare record. I mean, it's going for what? Like, when I see it on eBay, it's like over $100 or something?
Oh, yeah.
This is the B-side of My First Date. These are the Delicates and Johnny Bunny.
Johnny Bunny, man, where they squeak? Booner Bunny.
another comical story about when we recorded Johnny Bunny was they needed a drummer, and they went outside, they went downstairs where the musicians were lined up waiting for a job, and they got the drummer off the street, and he came up, and we call him the runaway drummer. No matter how many takes we took, he kept missing these beats and running faster and faster, and they actually, at the end of the session, paid him off with a box of donuts.
Based on his ability and his performance, maybe they should have paid him off with donut holes.
Absolutely.
Moving right along. Johnny Bunny. The Delicates, and I have them on the phone. I'm Ronnie Allen. Each time I mention this, I'll do it in a different order because I don't want to show favoritism to anybody. So this time I'll say we got Peg. How you doing, Peg?
Hi.
And we got Lee. How you doing?
I'm fine.
And we got D, or Denise.
Hi, Ron.
And speaking of me being Ronnie, the next... Well, this is kind of difficult to go to this next story, but of course this is probably in many respects the most important story about your career, because we're going to get to Murray the K. You recorded a song called Ronnie is My Lover, but before we get to Ronnie is My Lover and then another song that became much better known than Ronnie is My Lover, which was The Flip Side, how did you go from Tender Records to UNART?
Well, our manager just had these connections, and he just said, girls, you're coming in. We're signing a contract for UNART. And that was basically it.
You know, I think Billy Muir is the person that took us to UNART. He was a very popular guitar player and writer and arranger at that time. And UNART was a subsidiary of United Artists. So, of course, United Artists was maybe not the total parent company, but it was, you know, the bigger higher up on the
right.
rung there.
Yep.
And Billy Muir and Ted Eddy, our lovely little grandfatherly type manager, set up an appointment for us to meet Don Costa, a fabulous arranger and very popular at the time. And I remember that, you know, even though it doesn't seem like it's such a big deal now, we were very, very young to be writing our own songs. I mean, now it's commonplace that teenagers and preteens write songs about themselves and everything, but it was unusual then. So we went to this appointment, you know, all dressed up. We used to dress alike, even if we were, I don't know, going to the corner.
You were like the Bob C. Tripp?
That was the thing. The three of us dressed alike, and we never argued about it. And so we went to New York, and we had our songs written down. We, at any given time, probably had 10 to 20 songs in our heads. We were very musical, but none of us was musically trained. So we had our songs written on our school notebooks and stuff, and we went into Don Costa's big, fancy, wonderful office. You know, at the time, it was just such a big deal, you know, New York City, And he said, okay, girls, you know, sing your songs for me. And we sang them right there without any accompaniment or anything. And the next thing we knew was, it wasn't much after that, was it, that we were recording? He was recording Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet at the time and tagged us on to the end of one of their sessions. So here was this huge orchestra. I mean, 40 violins, big horn sections, strings. It was unbelievable. And I remember going in and saying, oh, my gosh, we wrote all this? You know, I had no concept. I mean, I knew we wrote the tune and the lyrics, and actually we did our own vocal arrangements. We didn't call it that, but we just said,
it's phenomenal.
Get her part, and I would get mine, right. These would get hers. So that was our first big recording experience.
A recording that you did on UNART, the two sides of the recording were Ronnie is My Lover, and, of course, I have to like that song. Being Ronnie, of course, and Black and White Thunderbird. Now, Ronnie is My Lover is not one that you wrote. Billy Muir wrote that with
Dick Wolf.
How did you get to meet Murray the K, and how does that story involve this particular recording, Ronnie is My Lover, and its flip side, Black and White Thunderbird? You want to tell that story, Denise?
Yes. Well, very simply, our three mothers were with us that day, and our manager said, I want you to go to the Shoreham Hotel in New York. You're going to meet Murray the K. Actually, it was Murray Kaufman. It wasn't even Murray the K. The disc jockey on 1010 Wins. So we went that day, and our three moms were like 150,000 degrees out. I'll never forget that, because of Arlene's mother was fanning herself with her skirt when we got upstairs. I'll never forget it. So we went up into his office, and he stood there, and he had a turntable in front of him, and he played Ronnie, which was, he was told, was the A side.
Murray says, okay, let's see what you have here. So he puts this recording on the turntable.
Ronnie is my lover, ooh-wee. Ronnie is my lover, ooh-wee. Ronnie is my...
Murray didn't listen to too much of that record. Is that right, Denise?
Actually, he took it right off and just shook his head back and forth like, no. Turned over to the other side, which was our Black and White Thunderbird, and he played the entire song, and he said, this is the one.
Beep, 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 Thunderbird. Beep, 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 yeah. Beep, beep, say someone, on a soap box, hit a little more than a bummy car with the Black and White Thunderbird. New Black and White Thunderbird, so cool, Black and White Thunderbird, happy as I can be, ah-ha, ah-ha. I'm ready to go down the street, I'm beating my bad dudes, all the cars, and me, oh my, she's got a Black and White Thunderbird. At last, Black and White Thunderbird, feel fast, Black and White Thunderbird, happy as we can be, ah-ha, ah-ha. New, but, clap, 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 clap,
Black and White Thunderbird, The Delicates. Wow.
And ever since then, we were his dancing girls. We were his everything. I mean, it was one thing after another after another. We did everything with him, all the biggest shows, the radio. He loved Black and White.
And the three of you wrote that song, Denise and Arlene and Peggy. Great car song. There's at least one person in the world who I think publicly has said that it is his all-time favorite car song ever.
Yes, that's Paul Grushkin, who wrote a book called Rockin' Down the Highway, which Peggy's picking up right now as we speak. And he wrote a little thing in there for me that it's his best rock and roll car song ever. That's his take on it. Very, very, very proud of that.
Very astute.
Very astute, yeah. Denise, you and I have talked over the last few months, and I know I have asked the question, and just for the sake of our listeners, I'm going to just tell people what I found out. I've said with these songs, and Black and White Thunderbird is one that you wrote, the interesting thing is so many years have passed, and it's difficult to tell who actually came up with the idea. Let's write a song, Black and White Thunderbird. Maybe you just all three just did it at the same time. But you do remember there was one line in Black and White Thunderbird that I believe your father came up with?
It was putt, putt, putt.
Okay.
Putt, 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 putt.
Putt, putt, putt.
We didn't think of what to put. We had yay, 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 beep, beep, beep. And he says, putt, putt, putt. Remember? Very special.
How about clunk, clunk, clunk? It's out of gas.
We could have clunked.
Could have clunked. Well, you know, your father actually could have been an honorary co-writer of that song.
That's right.
He was an honorary delicate.
I'm Ronnie, talking to the Delicates, and as a result of that recording, Black and White Thunderbird, initially a lot of great things happened, and recently some things happened relating to the song Black and White Thunderbird. Later in the show, we're going to mention how Black and White Thunderbird, within the last couple of years, has taken on a whole new life of its own. But we're going to stay in the past for a while right now, the happy past, Murray the K., playing Black and White Thunderbird, and it got tons of requests. Everybody wanted to hear that, and that led to you doing a lot of record hops, a lot of TV shows. Any of
you? Shows, Brooklyn Fox, Paramount, Comac Long Island Arena, everywhere. We were everywhere he was, we were. We worked with all the biggest stars in the world. We did the free stage at Palisades Park, Bobby Darin and
Johnny Mathis.
And Johnny Mathis.
Jerry Decay was really
our guy.
He was who all the kids, I mean, you know, and we were right in that group, listened to for hours and hours and hours, especially in the beginning when he was on all night on Wednesday.
Yeah,
I used to sneak my radio under my pillow.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's when we decided our theme song.
And the interesting thing is we were with him, which is really, I think, very special, from his transition from Murray Kaufman to Murray the K.
Uh-huh.
Our first themes were the Murray Kaufman Show, and then it was on the Swing and Soiree with Murray the K. So we were with him during that whole transitional thing. You know, he really went into a new category, like Grand Kook, and he was all these things.
You and Murray obviously got along very well, but there was this one time where he got really mad at you because of something you did related to a commercial for Proper... I'm going to pop all my P's here, I know it. Proper PH, which was a pimple.
I'm guilty. This is Lee.
Okay, Lee, what did you do? You were the perpetrator.
Well, he's, on the radio, I'm on the air, and he's talking about Proper PH and how everyone should run out and get it, even the delicate juice. And I said, we do not have pimples.
So what did Murray do?
I was incensed.
He was not happy.
Yeah.
He took out a roll of Scotch tape.
I just, unfortunately, sometimes it goes, you know, just goes from my brain to my tongue. I don't process in between.
He got annoyed, but it was a happy. He wasn't really mad at us.
He laughed about it afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, this was live.
So who got the Scotch tape, Lee?
He hit me with the Scotch.
Why did he hit you with the? But wait a minute, Lee was the one that did it. Why did you get the blame?
Because I was standing next to him. He couldn't get to me, so he threw it at. She's supposed to hit me.
And Peggy was having a good laugh over this, too.
Peggy was standing back laughing.
Yeah.
You know what? But when you look back, what fun that we were in the studio live all the time, bantering with him, singing back and forth, everything just, you know, off the cuff.
Always there.
I mean, now everything is, you know, you don't necessarily have guests, young kids in the studio with you talking and, you know, as part of a show.
Right.
But he probably was worried about, you know, the people that own the company.
Yeah.
He's getting paid to do these commercials.
Right.
Right. And his audience was probably to sell this product to teenagers.
And for the record, the delicates did not have pimples.
No, absolutely not.
Perfect skin.
And you still
do. Hold on, now one pimple in the bunch.
Great. Any rate, we're going to move right along now to a song, Mia Suri. There's a few websites that claim that Mia Suri is a form of Pig Latin, but that's really not correct, Denise, is it?
No, it's not.
It's a different type of language.
But actually what it is, it's carny talk.
Carny talk.
Yeah, from the carnival, and he kind of made it his own, like with the EUS, putting the EUS after every first letter.
Right.
That's what put them together.
Right.
And then he just put his own slant on it.
But I could understand.
Wasn't Pig Latin.
I could understand in a way when people are referencing Pig Latin because it's just a way of distorting of,
yeah,
you know what I mean, having like a fun. I mean, I spoke Pig Latin all the time when I was a kid because your parents, you know, couldn't understand you.
Yeah.
So, I a oxbe, igpe, atle, all a other.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, she's speaking backwards.
No,
but Mia Suri was not backwards.
Just keep it clean.
Pig Latin.
We're going to have people saying what she's saying.
Secret language. I said I spoke Pig Latin all the time.
Pig Latin.
You know, it was having a secret language that your parents couldn't understand. So I could see why people would refer to it as that, but Denise is right.
Yeah.
You know,
right. Okay.
That.
Was it Murray that suggested that you girls write a song about it?
Yes, he was a wonderful person. And
so he said, girls, I want you to write a song about this language, Mia Suri.
And he was very involved with us. And let me tell you something, when he latched on to us, there was nothing that he didn't do for us. We were everywhere. We appeared everywhere. We met everybody. We worked with everybody. So I'm very grateful to him.
And before,
you know, everybody has their quirks, but he was good to us.
I want to say one thing just to set the record straight, because there's a lot of confusion about this, but the delegates were Murray the K's very first dancing girls.
That's right.
Hell yeah.
Yes, we were.
There was subsequently another group, but the delegates came first.
We were the original dancing.
Absolutely. And we're going to listen to Mia Suri right now, and if you listen to it, it's not really all that difficult.
Here's someone, everybody, that's geared to rockin' tonight. Gonna read up the road till the green starts daylight.
Tony Chiazzoni. When you're alone in the dark with your feet sick, and you want to let him know just how much you care, say, be you say, I leave some you so. Hey, leave some, I won't ever let you go. Marry me, Surrey. Dwayne, be a Zane. Ricky, be a Sticky. Johnny, Chiazzoni.
I am Ronnie, talking to Denise Aziz and Pia Zeggy and our liaison.
Yes!
I think I actually did it right.
Right, good for you, Ron.
Oh, that's Mia Surrey. That is the Mia Surrey language. That came well before the name game. I would like to, if it's okay with you girls, play the flip side of Mia Surrey. You had a special type of harmony for the song Ring-a-Ding.
Well, the strange thing about Ring-a-Ding was the lead was low, was a very low key. And Arlene was the high harmony, I was the low harmony, but this was a very low lead. Lead meaning melody. So that was the difference with this song, melody.
So it has kind of a different sound from other recordings.
Yeah,
right,
because we changed
yeah,
our
right.
parts.
At the end of that recording. So which of you girls is doing the yeah?
Well, that's me, Ronnie. Denise, I did the yeah on Ring-a-Ding and all our other recordings.
So you were the yeah girl.
Yeah.
Ring-a-Ding by the Delicates. And I did a Ring-a-Ding and I called the Delicates on the phone and I said, oh, could you just stop everything you're doing and just do this show with me? And that was so nice of you to do it. I mean, you just had no idea I was going to call.
Thank you.
That's why we're doing this show, of course. We didn't plan it. I just called you like 10 minutes before. I said, hey, let's do an interview.
We're sitting around doing nothing, sure.
Now, for those of you who believe that, there is a bridge that I would like to sell you. We'll talk about it a little bit later on. Okay, let's get serious. You did Murray the K's show. Was it the Brooklyn Fox or the Brooklyn Paramount? Which show did you do?
Both.
Both of them. You would do a show for like 10 days and you do
seven. Yeah, 10 days. 8 shows a day. It was from 9 or 10 in the morning to late at night. Well, you know what the show was? It was the Clay Cole Murray the K Christmas show. That was one of them. That's the show that broke all existing records.
Fantastic.
That's the show that we were on, yeah.
So what do you do backstage between shows? You play ping pong? You play cards? What do you do?
Hang in the dressing room.
You sleep. You flirt.
Come in the room.
You sing together with other groups.
The room, find your underwear hanging on the balcony.
Right. Sometimes your underwear was stolen.
It was great. It was wonderful.
Murray the K did so many wondrous things for you, but we have to also mention a couple of other DJs who are extremely generous to the Delicates, and one of them was a gentleman that I used to know personally by the name of George Tucker. And Denise, what could you tell us about George?
George Tucker was great. He kind of picked up where Murray left off, like we were back and forth between him and Murray. George was another disc jockey that if he really liked you and he really cared about you,
he would go to the ends of the earth for you. He was a wonderful man. He was a family man. Got to meet his wife and his son, Neil, and we did a lot of hops for him, a lot of bowling alley where he broadcasted from the bowling alleys. But he was also on Wins, and he also knew Murray, so it was kind of a family thing. We did a lot of traveling with him. He used to come pick us up at my parents' deli, and
great.
George is a great guy.
Have you stayed in touch with George over the years?
Actually, not over the years, but we found each other just recently, maybe about within the last year or two. And actually, he really lives around the block from
wow.
me now in South Florida, so it's really funny.
So you got to get together at some point.
Yes, we will. Eventually, right. we will get together.
And there's another great disc jockey who coined the phrase rock and roll, the legendary Alan Freed. He did the Big Beat show. He had a Saturday night show, and he was a fantastic guy. He was another one that when he liked you, he had you on his show a lot, and we were on his show at least four or five times.
One of my all-time favorite records that I really flip over is called Flip Flip. I actually had a very brief recording career on my own, and I recorded a song called Flip Over You. It was on the Dapt record label, and unfortunately, Flip was a flop. That's the way it goes. You know, you can't have everything. Dapt was a very small record label. They became even smaller after my record came out.
Oh.
I helped that along. But my label mates were Jordan and the Fascinations, and Jordan married Sybil Burton, so he did okay.
He did great.
That's the truth. That's the truth. And founded a discotheque called Arthur's. Now, I have to tell you, when I heard Flip Flip, there was this one portion of the song, and I'm saying, what are they singing? It sounds like you're singing something about a chaperone, but it's not a chaperone, it's a trap of love.
Save me from this trap of love.
Yeah, I thought we were saying save me from this chaperone. Chaperone. Yeah. Save me from this chaperone. That's all I thought you were singing.
That's funny.
What is it? Ooey flip flip? Is that what it is?
Like, ooey flip flip.
Ah. In other words, that's what we're doing. We're flip flipping.
Ooey flip flip.
Right. I would ask you who came up with that, but then again, you don't remember who came up with any of these songs. They just.
You know what? I think part of it, I think it's good in a way because we really,
came out with things at the same time.
Exactly.
Right.
We didn't really, just sitting here, you know, having our wonderful reunion and, you know, being together, even as adults now. I mean, we sit at the table and
create.
Just create. We're somehow very compatible in creating different things.
That's great.
And I think it was, we all must have come from, well, I know we did, from families that had a lot of natural talent and musical and singing and stuff. So somehow we just be together. I don't even think it's that we don't remember who started something because we shared everything.
We did. We even shared each other's thoughts. I mean, we were so close that then, as now, we sometimes finish each other's sentences and finish each other's thoughts. And in our writing, we often are thinking of the same words to go in a particular spot in the song. It's just crazy. I mean, it's like, I don't know, like we were triplets separated at birth.
The story of the Delicates would not be complete if we did not mention the fact that not only did you do recordings on your own, not only were you Murray the K's dancing girls and do all sorts of appearances, but you also did some lucrative backup work. Isn't that true, Denise?
Yes, it is, Ronnie.
You like the way I enunciated
it? I love the way you said that. That was fabulous. Actually, I want to talk a little bit about our very, very first backup experience. It was very, very special. We were recording one of our songs. Of course, Don Costa was the arranger. And Teddy Randazzo, who was like the incredible, gorgeous heartthrob, movie star. He was just so beautiful. And he walked into the studio, and he came up to us, and he said, you know, I really love your sound, and I would love to put you on a backup of a song I wrote called Journey to Love, and the artist is Al Martino. And we were like, oh, we can't do that. We never did that before. And he said, you know, you're going to be great. You're going to do it. He kind of forced us into doing it. He helped us through, and it just turned out fantastic. And we even got to tour with Al Martino a lot after that.
One of my favorite recordings that you did the backup on was When the Bells Stop Ringing by Frankie Sardo.
Well, an interesting thing with that is Frankie Sardo had a couple of songs, I Know Why and So Do You and When the Bells Stop Ringing. We didn't know until years later that Frankie Sardo was one of the entertainers that missed that fatal flight with the Big Bopper and Richie Valens and Buddy Holly. Frankie Sardo, he and Dion, you know, decided not to go.
We're going to listen to a little bit of this recording, When the Bells Stop Ringing, and it's all three Delicates, right, doing the backup singing on this?
Yes.
With Frankie Sardo. That was Frankie Sardo with the Delicates in the background on a song called When the Bells Stop Ringing. I'm Ronnie Allen talking to the Delicates, Denise and Peggy and Arlene. Now, let's talk about one other background recording that you did in which you didn't sing a single solitary note. Do you have any idea what I'm talking about?
Yes, we do.
Wait a minute. Now, if the Delicates were doing backup on a recording and they didn't sing, were you playing the kazoo maybe?
Oh.
No.
We were clapping, yeah. Don Costa was our arranger, and he was doing an instrumental version of I'll Walk the Line. And he asked us to do clapping through the whole song. And that's what we did. We stood there and clapped in tempo.
Interesting.
We tapped in tempo with the music.
Arlene, let me understand. You tapped in tempo?
I love it. Leave it in.
I'm going to leave that
in. It works for me. We clapped in time for the music. Okay.
Wait a minute.
It's okay. Whatever way you want to put it, it's fine. Oh, my God. What a bonus. Oh, see what happens when you don't take your medication? Lee, that's hysterical. We tapped in Klempo.
It opened up a whole new career. We did at least about 150 backups.
Right.
After that, where all we did was clap.
The next day, we had our hands in shorts.
Once in a while, we stomped our feet, pulled our hair. But
actually, you had a turned down assignment. You once received an assignment to do a clapping session. You said, no, I can't do it. We have our hands full right now.
That's right. I like that, Ron.
Did you have other clappers on that record?
My mom and my two kid brothers, Louie and Michael, also clapped on that session.
All the clappers on that record were either the Delicates or your family?
Yes.
Well, we're going to listen to the portion of I'll Walk the Line by Don Costa, which has the legendary clapping by the Delicates and family. Now that that's over, I'm going to... That was really well done. That was excellent. Did you have to do a lot of rehearsing with that?
We just went through it. He pointed where he wanted us to clap, and he cut, hand signals cut when he wanted us for pros.
You did a lot of appearances on various bandstand shows, including The Bandstand Show. I understand you had an interesting experience on Connecticut Bandstand. Who was the host of Connecticut Bandstand?
The host was Jim Gallant. He introduced us. We sang both our songs. We sang Black and White Thunderbird and Ronnie is My Lover.
Lip-syncing.
Yes, lip-syncing. And it was live, and part of our routine was we faced away from the camera. We went beep, 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 and then we turned to the camera, Thunderbird!
We're going to recreate what happened, because I know the story. I'm going to pretend I'm Jim Gallant. Ladies and gentlemen, let's make them feel right at home. Here are the Delicates and their hit record of Black and White Thunderbird. That really happened?
Really happened.
And what?
Beep, 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 beep.
What do you do when that happened? Do you start singing faster? Or what did you...
No, we were just shocked. We started laughing.
We were shocked and laughed.
I bet you the crowd loved it.
They loved it.
You also appeared on other bandstand shows. You're on the Buddy Dean show, which I think was in Baltimore, right?
Yeah, he was huge. He was really the Dick Clark of Baltimore.
Exactly.
And you appeared on a show in New York called the Clay Cole Show.
Oh, yeah. Many times. And Rate the Record. We did a lot of skits on his show. He was great in that he's very entertaining, and he really got into the people that appeared on the show. He was a showman.
Yeah,
he would dance with you and encourage you. And then if someone else was appearing on the show, like one time Tommy Fassenda at High School USA, remember that song? He asked us to be the cheerleaders, just stand behind him, and there's these pom-poms.
Shake up pom-poms.
And be High School USA, and we did the backstop. We had tremendous memories of that. We did his show about four or five times, and it was great.
Clay Cole, by the way, is back. Visit his his website, Clay Cole Show, that's CLAYCOLESHOW.com. Unbelievable website.
Yes, that is fabulous, really.
You might even see some Delicates pictures there, right?
Oh, they're in there. Yeah. Not everybody, thousands of photos are phenomenal.
We're going to go to Dick Clark right now. Dick Clark was like the big enchilada of the bandstand shows. That was the show that you wanted to get on back in those days. The show was still being broadcast from Philadelphia at the time. You were invited to appear on the show, not to do Black and White Thunderbird, but as a result of that song, Denise.
Correct. Yeah, because it was a significant hit in the New York area, and that did get us a spot on the American Bandstand. But we did not sing it. We did Your Happiest Years.
Dick Clark had written a book called Your Happiest Years.
Ah.
Which was great because,
yeah,
you know, with the two, it all made sense.
It's a favorite of a lot of people.
Yeah,
they love it.
Very,
it's
very
different.
Pretty song.
Well, what we're going to do is we're going to listen to just a little bit of it now. We're going to close the show with the entire recording. Your Happiest Years, and you got great applause for that song. Then you had the interview with Dick Clark. What did he ask you?
Actually, he was very comical. He asked us, how did you get your name, The Delicates? And I said, we got our name, The Delicates, because my parents own a delicatessen in Belleville, New Jersey. And he said, well, that's good, because they could have named you the Salamis. And it was very comical. It was a really big laugh, and I thought that was very witty on his part.
The final recording that we're going to play, which involved all three of you, it's a nice peppy type of a song called Too Young to Date.
Sometimes we would start, we were like bored in gym class, and Peggy would turn and give me this look like, hey, your eyes are rolling. We'd start a song.
Look, what a picture of me.
We're in gym class. We look at each other, leave the school, and meet up with Lee, and by the time we got home, we wrote Too Young to Date.
Okay.
That was because my father,
yeah,
not want me to date. I wasn't allowed.
Well, you have to realize all of our fathers wouldn't let us date until we were 16. And being 14 at the time, those 2 years sounded like an eternity. I mean, who knew we'd be alive at 16?
To date by the Delicates, and I'm Ronnie Allen, walking down memory lane with Denise and Peggy and Arlene. The three of you are just so special to me in so many ways. I have loved your music over the years, and I am glad that, thanks in large measure to the internet, you are not forgotten. People know who you are, and they know about your music. If it wasn't for the internet, you know, a lot of recording acts might have been forgotten.
That's true. Yep.
I do have one question. If you girls were too young to date, how come you weren't too young to drive a black and white Thunderbird?
That was our dream.
That was in our dream.
Oh, okay.
Our dream, and we wanted our dream date to be in it with us.
Okay.
That didn't quite work out.
So black and white Thunderbird was really just a fantasy. You weren't thinking about something you were really doing or planning to do.
I had one years later.
You did?
Yeah.
Really?
Years later.
Was it because of the record you decided to get one?
We wrote the song because that was one of our favorite cars.
It must have been extra special. It must have been extra added incentive to get black and white Thunderbird.
Absolutely.
Well, that was Too Young to Date. That was the last recording that was on United Artists. And there was eventually a change in record company affiliation, but the story goes a little bit deeper than that. Arlene, could you tell us what happened after Too Young to Date?
Well, after Too Young to Date, unfortunately, I had to leave the group. It wasn't what I really wanted to do, but circumstances made it so. Namely, my mom passed away. I was 17 at the time, and I was needed at home because I had a younger sister, 7 years younger than myself, and that's why I had to leave the group. Really didn't want to, but that's how it goes.
Was there a farewell party of sorts or anything?
No, not really, because it was a bittersweet.
Yeah, it was sad.
We didn't do anything like that.
But we do want to point out that you did stay in touch with the girls over the years, right?
Oh, yes.
Your membership in the group may have ended at that time, but your friendship did not.
Oh, never.
Right.
Never.
After Arlene decided to leave the group, Roulette made an offer for the Delicates, which at that point were Denise and Peggy. They got you away from United Artists, huh?
Yes, they did. Did they get us away, or was our contract up or something? I don't remember.
I think they, because Arlene left and there was two, they just went over to Roulette Records, and the arranger was Henry Glover.
Oh, yeah.
He was great. He was absolutely fabulous. And we recorded a few songs together as a duo, and we really missed Arlene. It was a different sound. It was a good sound, but it was a total different sound, I think.
One of my favorite Roulette recordings was a song called Little Ship. That was written, I believe, by Doc Pomus and Morty Schumann.
Yeah. Well, meeting him was really cool. He was a really nice guy.
Doc Pomus.
Right. It was just an honor to do one of his songs. It was like a Hawaiian flavor song, and
it almost had a Santo and Johnny
flavor to it,
that steel guitar sound.
Yeah. We're going to take a listen right now to the Delicates, and this time we're just talking about Denise and Peggy on Little Ship.
My heart feels such pain.
One of my favorite recordings from 1956 is by the Cleftones. They did a song called Little Girl of Mine, and something very unusual happened involving your group with that.
Well, we did a cover of this song, and it was Little Boy of Mine, and Peggy and I were in the studio, and we did one version where we sang the lead together in two-part harmony, and we also did our backup harmonies. It was really cute, and when we were finished with the session, in the next studio were the actual Cleftones themselves at the same time. We had no idea they were there. And they came into the studio. And they, 1, 2, 3, jumped right on the mic, and they did their, they did their whole thing. And Peggy and I did another recording, so we had two recordings of that.
Let's listen to the opening of the one that the Cleftones did with you, and then we'll play the one that you did by yourself. So here is the Delicates with the Cleftones, Little Boy of Mine. Well, that was a little bit of the Cleftones and Little Girl of Mine. Oh, actually, we have to call it Little Boy of Mine because it was a Delicates Cleftones record. At any rate, this is the version by just the Delicates. This is Denise and Peggy. Did a song that some radio stations wouldn't play. Is it actually possible that a Delicates recording could get banned?
Yes.
It was a song written by Jeff Barry, one of the best songwriters in the business. He actually did a cameo. He was the voice in that song. There was a song called Dickie Went.
Dickie Went and Did It. Oh, my God.
And at the end, he came
It took a while, Peggy, didn't it? Yeah.
Great novelty. I completely forgot about that. You know, that should be worth a lot of money to collectors.
Exactly.
Dickie Went and Did It.
I contacted Jeff Barry years later just to send him a hi and everything, and then he wrote me back, "Oh, it's so good to hear from you, and how you doing and all." I said, "I'm just so honored to have been part of that song and your writing or whatever I wrote." And he wrote back, he said, "Thank you so much." He goes, "But I don't think you can handle it. I can't tell you what Dickie really went and did."
And did it. That was the Delicates. And you heard it right here on the Ronnie Allen Show, which I still call the show with no name. I have never come up with a name for what it is that I do. I see nobody's yelling out suggestions. So
we'll have to think about
that.
Delicates are together. We'll come up with a name.
That sounds good. Before we bring Arlene back into the picture, is there anything else you want to mention about the Delicates, like the two of you being together?
Denise just mentioned Brooklyn Paramount. Of course, we had done the Brooklyn Paramount and the Brooklyn Fox years before with Murray and everything as his dancing girls. But we were just talking about it last night. We were probably on the bill there, number one, when Tony Orlando had his first hit. We also had memories of Neil Sedaka's wonderful parents, because we would do shows there in Brooklyn during the spring break and during the winter break. We lived in New Jersey, and we couldn't always get back. It was like 8 shows a day with movies in between, and Neil Sedaka's parents invited us to their apartment in Brooklyn New Year's Eve. We were all working, and it was too late, you know, right, for us to get picked up and everything to go home, go back and forth. And they had food for us, and it was just fabulous. There were so many people at that time, so many shows that we were a part of all through our career as the Delicates, actually.
Even as a duo, you did shows. You did a lot of performing as
a
duo.
One of the most memorable shows for us was when we toured with Clay Cole, and we were doing shows all around New York and then on tour also. But I have a special memory about working at a club called the Camelot at the time. Of course, Denise and I were trying to be very sexy and look older. We had tight dresses and, you know. And I think you mentioned that Clay even bought us one of the dresses or found it.
Both of them.
He bought both of them. And so we're in this show, and it was at the time when Joey D and the Starlighters were doing the twist. So a lot of the audience was actually very well-dressed society, matrons and their husbands or boyfriends or something, and here we are singing, you know, all rock and roll songs, and it was like an ensemble show. I mean, Clay sang and danced.
Yeah, it was called the Twisterama.
Twisterama.
Like dance-based.
And the audience had these bejeweled women, you know, with their fabulous hairdos and everything, and we're singing our little hearts out and doing twists and dancing and everything, and Joe DiMaggio asked me to dance. I mean, he probably asked Denise's mother first. I don't know. I danced with Joe DiMaggio, and I mean, you know, to me, he was this very nice older man and everything, but that was thrilling. When I got home and told my parents, they were more excited about the fact that I met Joe DiMaggio than the fact that I was singing with famous people and
party, wow.
And, you know.
And a lot of famous people came to see that show. Liberace,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
Sal Mineo,
uh-huh.
Anne Margaret, Joe DiMaggio, Marie the K, a lot of famous people.
It was like
came.
The Clicky Club.
Yeah, it was a great right. show. It really was.
Well, then that's because of Clay, too.
Oh, yeah.
Clay was not just an interviewer, he was actually an entertainer too.
Oh, yeah.
And with Clay, it was like he was like one of the kids.
Right.
It was like,
well, he got involved in everything you did. He was standing next to you, dancing. He was always moving and extremely talented.
Denise, you and Peggy once did a backup session with one of the legends of rock and roll.
Well, the legend was the one and only Frankie Lyman, who was also on Roulette Records the same time Peg and I were, and he did the answer song to Barry Mann's Who Put the Bomb, called I Put the Bomb. The producer arranger on that session was Henry Glover, and Peggy and I shared the backup on that. We did the high oohs in the background, and Peggy opened, and I did the close at the end. And it was fantastic. We're in this tiny little recording booth, the three of us, and we did some goofs in the beginning of the session. We just cracked up laughing. And at the end, when I had to say a speaking part, the way Frankie got me to do it was by holding me around my waist real tight and squeezing me so my voice would project in almost like a strangling type of a sound.
So what you're telling me is the strange lady at the very end of that record who was doing that speaking part was you.
Exactly. And Peg is in the opening.
Peg
and we're all
opening.
Giggling because she goofed up.
Ah.
So and you hear Frankie say, oh, she grabbed her face. Oh, don't pop your peas and
yeah.
all that. And Henry left it in.
Yeah, well, you can't get player. Try not to pop the peas too much.
Oh. I'd like to...
That's all right, honey. It's just a goof. She grabbed the face.
Now you can thank the guy who wrote the song that made your baby fall in love with you.
Denise, that was a very strange record.
But a lot of fun.
I wish I could have been a fly on the wall of that recording session.
It was a fantastic thing for Peg and I to do that. It was just wonderful.
We're going to bring Arlene back right now as we're heading toward the end of the show. Arlene, I understand that you girls were on the Joe Franklin Show and did Ronnie Is My Lover and Black and White Thunderbird. Something happened involving an orange crate and your high heel getting caught.
Let's say the Joe Franklin Show, as much as it was fun, money apparently was an object because the setting, the stage, the studio was not best quality. And the stage for us was an orange crate covered with a piece of felt, like you throw over a table.
Oh, wow.
We're standing up there, you know, in tandem and facing the camera, going through our routine. And part of the routine at a certain point is you're facing, let's say, facing left, and then at a particular spot, you turn around and we face right. Well, Peggy and Denise are facing right, and I'm still facing left. Because my heel went through the slat of the orange crate, got caught, and for that split second, I didn't know what to do. My face probably looked like a deer caught in the headlights. So quickly, I thought, took my foot out of my shoe, turned around the way the girls were, and I was standing on one heel and my tippy toe. I didn't know what else to do. And, you know, I'm not a tall person to begin with.
Live TV, folks, live TV.
Ron, it's funny because hearing Arlene say this, we had another mishap on that very same show. I don't want to blame them. It probably was a cheap set, but the next thing that happened had nothing to do with the people on the set. We were standing there and singing, and, you know, as we said, we had our little what we called routines, you know, moving around. All of a sudden, I feel Denise's bracelet catch on the back of my sweater. And she couldn't, you know, we're singing along, you know, with the recording. I mean, we were probably lip-syncing, but we were singing live in the studio, and she's singing, and I'm hearing kind of at the corner of her mouth, I can't move, I can't move, don't move, you know. And so there was no way, you know, part of the dance thing was we would turn this way, put this arm out, turn that way. And all of a sudden, on live TV, luckily we knew each other so well that our minds had to just go in the same direction, and we modified live what we were doing. Because if she pulled away, she'd probably unravel my sweater.
You know what would have happened if she had pulled away? You would have had a wardrobe malfunction.
Oh, boy. That one of those. It was 1959. That would have been shocking.
At any rate, we are coming now to the close of the show, and we got a couple of bits of business to do here involving Black and White Thunderbird, because the end of the story was not the Delicates recording Black and White Thunderbird. It turns out that there was a group from a different country. I don't know, was it a couple of girls? Chicas del Coro, is it, Denise?
Yes, recorded it several years ago.
And you had no idea that they were doing this.
Oh, I was just Googling around, checking out Delicates, and it came up and actually got in touch with them. Two beautiful girls, and they did like more of a rockabilly rendition of the song.
Let's take a little listen to Black and White Thunderbird, Chicas del Coro. Del Coro, Black and White Thunderbird, but there's more, ladies and gentlemen. Black and White Thunderbird has truly become a legendary car song. I understand that there's a Thunderbird Club that plays it often in London.
Yes. Ooh, we have to go visit them. The Thunderbird Club, yeah.
Thunderbird Club. And possibly the biggest part of the story right now in terms of the number of people who have gotten to be introduced to your song is a gentleman named Fred Mollen, who is connected with the Disney company. And Denise,
correct,
just tell briefly what happened with that.
He was putting together a CD for Disney, Lightning McQueen Fast Tracks, which was inspired by the movie Cars. And the little girls that recorded it, Jamie Babbitt and Britt Savage, had several songs to choose from. And they chose Black and White Thunderbird to be part of it.
Thousands of people bought it. In fact, and this is possibly the most amazing part of the story, Black and White Thunderbird actually ended up making a Billboard chart close to 50 years after it was written.
Isn't that amazing?
That particular CD, which is the Lightning McQueen's Fast Tracks CD.
I called Black and White Thunderbird the little song that could. After 50 years, 50 years, it made it to top 10 Billboard in the kids' audio chart. Very proud of that.
Let's listen to a little bit of Jamie Babbitt and Britt Savage doing their updated version and sounding a little bit like the Delicate.
Well, Ron, not a little bit. Our exact vocal arrangement.
Okay, exact vocal arrangement.
We were kidding. I had to put that in there. I'm thrilled they did it, but I had to say it.
Black and White Thunderbird.
Beep, 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 Thunderbird. Beep, 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 yeah. Beep, beep. Save some money, put it in a jar. Save a little more than I bought me a car. But the Black and White Thunderbird, so new. Black and White Thunderbird, so cool. Black and White Thunderbird, happy as I can be. Oh, when I rode down the street, the pick of my guy who saw the car and said, me, oh my, she got a Black and White Thunderbird. At last, Black and White Thunderbird, real fast, Black and White Thunderbird, happy as we can be. Do it, but, Thunderbird,
This has been just such a joy for me. I can't tell how much I've enjoyed it.
We have too, Ron.
The three of you, you have a wonderful friendship. Your friendship is, how many years? Like 55-year friendship? It's incredible.
Isn't that?
I don't want to make you seem old, but you know it is. You could put a price on recordings, but you can't put a price on friendship.
True. So, Ron, our next project involving Black and White Thunderbird, we already started it, is a children's book.
Really?
Black and White Thunderbird. We started it.
I didn't know anything about it.
We only together one evening, and we began creating. So we're really looking forward to that. We're planning to do a series of children's books where we have incorporated in it some life lessons for children, but in a really fun, wonderful way, and based on, for the most part, songs that we wrote when we were kids.
I want to give each of you a chance to say something before we make a final dedication, which Denise will do. Lee, you got the floor for the next 20 seconds or so. You want to say anything to anybody?
I just want to say hi to my grandchildren. I love them dearly. And it's funny that all this notoriety at this point in my life, that my grandchildren think it's cool that Grandma's a rock star.
I think it's wonderful. Lee, thank you so much for being a part of this show. Peggy, it's your turn.
Well, what's been very special to me is that, as all of us went on to sing in different ways with different people and so forth, and I love everybody that I worked with in the past and work with now, but no one can ever take the place of Arlene and Denise. I mean, we're childhood friends, we rediscovered each other, and we will be friends for the rest of our lives. It's a great, wonderful feeling, and it will always be extra, extra special.
Denise?
Okay, I just want to thank you very much, Ronnie, for doing this Delicates interview. It means the world to me, just like it does to the girls. It really gets to my heart. And the song that you're going to play now, we would like to dedicate this to a very special friend, someone who really loves the Delicates music, and his name is Wes Smith. We love you, Wes.
Kiss we share, for I will bring you happiness.
that's the show. Now, a couple of bonus tracks by the Delicates. Here's Arlene, Peggy, and Denise, doing the flip side of Too Young to Date. This is called The Kiss.
Da-da-da-da-da-da, kiss is such a wondrous thing. Da-da-da-da-da-da, kiss can make a sad heart sing. Da-da-da-da-da-da, kiss is such a wondrous thing. A kiss is something sweet and gentle. A kiss is something sentimental. A kiss is when two lips combine. Two lips, my love, two lips like yours and mine. Da 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 da. Kiss is such a wondrous thing. Da 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 da. You are true. I want your kiss tonight and day. Let's kiss, my love. Let's kiss our cares away. Da 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 da. Kiss is such a wondrous thing. Da 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 da. Kiss is like a sad heart sing. Da 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 da. Kiss is such a wondrous thing. Kiss is such a wondrous.
And finally, this is the last recording that the Delicates released. Peggy and Denise sing Strange Love.
They say